Those of you who were here last week were treated to Eboo Patel, a very inspirational speaker. He spoke on the subject of interfaith leadership. And as I walked out, my thought was, and I have to follow this guy? I doubt that I can be that inspirational, but I have some suggestions for Joe Bancroft. If you invite me back next year, I'm thinking the week before we have someone from the American Society of Actuaries. There's an old joke, actuaries exist to make accountants and economists look exciting. Where's Jeff? No insult intended, Jeff. I have another idea, maybe a horticulturalist friend of mine who's prepared to talk on how to monitor the growth of your lawn in real time. So today, don't expect something as inspiring as last week, but I do want to try to give you my sense of the economic context in which you're living your lives and pursuing your businesses. And I see 2013 as a pivotal year for national economic policy. Fiscal policy decisions were subordinated last year to the November elections. Congress and the administration deferred action on many of the stickiest fiscal questions, including the most basic question of how and when the federal government will take steps toward long-run budget sustainability. Electoral considerations gave fiscal authorities something of a pass for the year 2012. I doubt that any such passes will be issued in 2013. Our fiscal imbalances are still building, as are the damaging effects of moving from one short-term budget crisis to another. Lawmakers have a short period of time before the political cycle associated with the midterm elections kicks in. These realities lend a now-or-never dimension to the year ahead. Fiscal uncertainties have challenged the Federal Reserve just as they have challenged all private decision makers. The Fed has done a great deal to date to promote recovery, but the ongoing effectiveness of the Fed's efforts does depend critically on the removal of fiscal policy uncertainty. In addition, consumer and business confidence, factors that have a great influence on the direction of the economy, may swing on how these policy concerns play out this year. If 2013 is a pivotal year for fiscal authorities to deliver clarity on future policy, it is by extension a pivotal year for the course of monetary policy. In my remarks today, I'll lay out my sense of the economic context in which critical policy choices will be made. I'll begin by briefly reviewing how economic conditions evolved in 2012. I'll summarize where I think the economy stands at this moment, the beginning of 2013, and I'll present my outlook for the year ahead. I will also detail the moving parts of the Federal Reserve's monetary policy and try to clarify aspects that may not be well understood. And as always, my comments are my personal views, and they may not be shared by my colleagues on the Federal Open Market Committee and in the Federal Reserve System. First, let's briefly look at what happened in 2012. The economy grew slowly as it continued to struggle with various restraints on growth. These restraining forces kept overall economic activity subdued, with the result that employment expanded only very gradually. For 2012, real gross domestic product, GDP, growth is expected to come in at around 1.8% when finally totaled. Nearly 4 years after the end of the Great Recession, the pace of recovery remains sluggish. Perhaps the most potent restraint on growth was wariness born of uncertainty. The uncertainty factor presents analytical challenges. Business, and for that matter, consumers, always face risk. There's always risk in making a decision to invest, expand operations, or hire another employee. Businesses try to manage risk, but uncertainty, if severe, paralyzes businesses. The distinction between risk and uncertainty is like guessing the outcome of a bet based on a coin toss versus guessing the outcome of a bet where you don't know the rules and have no idea how the winner will be determined. In 2012, an array of uncertainties rendered both consumers and businesses quite cautious about spending. The uncertainties that most weighed on economic actors related to the outcome of the elections, fiscal issues here at home, the cost of healthcare, regulatory rules, and the European sovereign debt crisis. And I should add, two severe storms, obviously unanticipated, also set back the economy in certain regions of the country. The question is whether we've been facing degrees of uncertainty materially more confounding than whatever you think of as normal times. Recent attempts to measure comparative uncertainty conditions over time suggest that the answer is yes. And in the Southeast, I heard over the past year a lot of comments by business people to the effect that they were, and in fact remain, very reluctant to step out and expand aggressively. This was especially the case in the final weeks of the year, starting just after the election, when anxiety about the fiscal cliff, no doubt, had a damping effect on activity in spite of some encouraging developments in the course of the year. Some good things did happen last year. There were a number of positive signs in the economy from which I think we can take heart as we move into 2013. For example, the housing market appeared to stabilize and begin a recovery as measured by home sales, house prices, and to some extent, construction activity. The bleeding stopped. The energy industry was vibrant in both exploration and production. The auto industry, which is important in the Southeast, continued to record strong and rising sales. That said, at the macro level, the national unemployment rate changed little during the first half of 2012. From January through July, the unemployment rate hung between 8.1% and 8.3%. By September, the rate had fallen to 7.8%, where it remains today. The overall employment situation continues to be a major concern. Despite pretty steady job creation since 2010, unemployment remains far too high. About 40% of the people who are out of work have been so for 6 months or more, and many people who desire full-time work are still working part-time. Participation, that is, participation in the labor force, has been falling over recent years and is very close to the lowest rate on record since 1980. Unemployment, underemployment, and abandonment of effort to find a job, taken together, present a sobering picture for policymakers. At the same time, inflation stayed somewhat below the FOMC, the Federal Open Market Committee's 2% target for a good part of the year. We saw a slight uptick in inflation numbers during the first quarter of 2012, mostly due to higher energy prices, followed by numbers below 2% later in the year. So to summarize, in brief, the story of 2012 was one of moderate growth with occasional short-lived periods of acceleration off that trend. That's been the case, for the most part, since the recession ended in the summer of 2009. So we begin the year in a mode of slow overall growth, tolerable inflation, and gradual progress on unemployment. One of the ways we do economics at the Atlanta Fed is to step back and try to discern the basic trend lines of the economy, looking through month-to-month up and down movements of the data. We try to frame a basic narrative for the evolution of the economy. When the incoming data and other indicators seem to diverge consistently and materially from this narrative, we rethink our explanation of what's happening. Over the last months, our narrative has not changed much. The continuing theme is slow growth hovering around 2% per annum. This rate of growth is below potential, and in our estimation, it compares unfavorably with past recoveries. We remain in a long slog. For 2013, we at the Atlanta Fed are expecting GDP growth in the range of 2 to 2.5%, basically more of the same. However, there may be some upside depending on how fiscal policy deliberations go. A number of our business contacts across the Southeast believe there is some amount of pent-up demand on the part of businesses and consumers resulting from deferred spending, and that this demand could be unleashed with removal of fiscal uncertainties. I want to believe that this is realistic. Now let me turn to a discussion of monetary policy as an element of the effort to promote economic recovery. The Federal Open Market Committee has held its policy rate, the federal funds rate, at a range of 0 to 25 basis points, effectively zero, since December 2008. That's a little over 4 years now. As you know, the Fed has also applied additional monetary stimulus through use of what might be called balance sheet tools. In September of last year, the FOMC decided to increase its support for housing market recovery and began an open-ended program of purchases of agency mortgage-backed securities at the pace of $40 billion per month. At its December meeting, the FOMC decided to continue purchasing longer-term Treasury securities at a pace of $45 billion per month. You may know this program by the commonly used term quantitative easing, or QE. This program is also open-ended. In continuing these purchases, the Fed replaced what we called the maturity extension program, or the so-called Operation Twist, with outright purchases of the longer-term treasuries. Operation Twist involved simultaneous purchases of long-term treasuries and sales of short-term treasuries. We stopped the sales of short-term treasuries because we effectively exhausted our stock of short-term treasuries. I'd like to make 3 points about these policy actions. First, the December action shouldn't be viewed as new additional stimulus, but rather as continuation of an already in-force policy designed to put downward pressure on longer-term interest rates. The difference between Operation Twist and the open-ended purchase program is that the latter expands the size of the Fed's balance sheet, while the former did not. I do not view this distinction as important in its economic effects. But I do think the growth of the Fed's balance sheet could have longer-term consequences that are worrisome. While I've supported these policy decisions to date, I do acknowledge legitimate concerns. My view is that purchasing longer-term Treasury and mortgage-backed securities has likely put some downward pressure on longer-term interest rates broadly and has helped housing markets in particular. At the same time, the benefits of indefinite purchases are debatable, and it's been argued that the potential costs could rise as the size of the Fed's balance sheet increases. Let me explain what I mean by costs. There is a risk, given the Fed's cumulative share of the Treasury and mortgage-backed securities markets, that at some point securities purchases could have adverse effects on market functioning and financial stability. Also, depending on the interplay between the eventual shrinking of the balance sheet and the path of interest rates, the Federal Reserve's net income and its remittances to the Treasury could be significantly affected during the period of policy normalization. Furthermore, the accumulating purchases of bonds could complicate the FOMC's efforts to withdraw monetary stimulus when the appropriate time comes. We've tested tools for what's called exit, but it will be uncharted territory. As my second point, let me make clear that expansionary monetary policy based on bond purchases does not increase the fiscal deficit or the federal debt. The liabilities of the central bank do not add to the national debt that must be serviced by tax receipts. And virtually all of the income the Fed earns from the securities it buys is remitted to the U.S. Treasury, which means these earnings are used to reduce the fiscal deficit. Such an asset purchase program is designed to strengthen economic activity and reduce joblessness. This should add to government tax revenue and reduce the burden of spending on extended unemployment and other social benefit programs. It's been argued that the Fed policy of keeping interest rates low makes it easier for Congress to kick the can down the road, as they say. Well, this critique can be applied to every expansionary monetary action. An easier monetary policy necessarily lowers the cost of borrowing to the government. We simply cannot use our policies to stimulate economic activity and be neutral regarding the cost of funds to the Treasury. Monetary policy is certainly not formulated with the intent to influence fiscal deliberations and outcomes. The monetary policy decisions of the FOMC are directed by law to promote the goals of maximum employment and stable prices. My third point is that open-ended does not mean without bound. The bond buying program is not QE infinity. There appears to have been some confusion about this. In determining how long the purchase programs should continue, the FOMC has indicated that it intends to assess labor market developments on the one hand and review the program's efficacy and costs on the other. For now, I think the open-ended nature of the asset purchase programs is called for because the outlook for the pace of improvement in the labor market and the broader economy remains unclear. From this juncture, with so many unknowns, quite divergent economic scenarios are plausible. In these circumstances, it would not be prudent to commit up front to a specific size, pace, and mix of asset purchases. In December, the FOMC adjusted its so-called forward guidance on how long it expects short-term interest rates to remain near zero. Specifically, the FOMC announced that it anticipates that the federal funds rate will remain near zero as long as the unemployment rate exceeds 6.5% and as long as projected inflation 1 to 2 years ahead does not exceed the Fed's long-run 2% inflation goal by more than 0.5%. I want to stress that these are thresholds, not triggers. Previously, the guidance on how long interest rates would remain near zero was expressed in terms of a date, specifically mid-2015. The 6.5% threshold is fully consistent with the FOMC's earlier guidance of interest rate liftoff at mid-2015. The majority of the committee still believes that the liftoff date for the FOMC's policy rate will be 2015 or later. The 6.5% unemployment threshold, which is conditional on inflation remaining contained, was introduced to make it easier for people to assess how policy might evolve along with economic conditions. It was not intended to signal any fundamental change in policy. Equally important, the 6.5% unemployment rate threshold does not apply to the FOMC's asset purchase programs. The asset purchase programs are designed to provide a boost to the economy, to put wind in the sails of economic recovery. For me, the decision to continue with these programs will be based on ongoing assessments of benefits and costs, as I mentioned earlier. How fast might the economy reach the 6.5% unemployment threshold? To get some idea, consider that the average pace of job gains over the past 6 months has been 160,000 a month. And suppose that this pace is sustained going forward and that the labor force participation rate remains at the current level of 63.6%. Using a tool that we've developed at the Atlanta Fed, what we call the jobs calculator, it's straightforward to compute that it would take almost 3 years to reach an unemployment rate of 6.5%. So it's obvious that the faster the average pace of job creation, the sooner the 6.5% will be reached. For example, job gains of 184,000 a month implies about 2 years to reach 6.5%. But it takes job creation averaging 262,000 a month to shorten the time frame to around 1 year. Clearly, a lot is riding on the pace of job creation. And to a substantial extent, the pace of job creation is riding on reducing uncertainty, especially policy uncertainty. The coming months will be, in my opinion, something of a moment of truth for fiscal policy making. The year 2013 will be a test of the country's ability to govern itself in the realm of public finances. Monetary policy has done a lot to move the country to this juncture. Monetary policy actions over the past 4 years have fostered faster growth than we otherwise would have experienced. Without these policy actions, growth of gross domestic product and jobs would have been lower, in my opinion. The tools of monetary policy remain at work in support of continued recovery and an acceleration of growth and hiring. But monetary policy simply cannot offset the effects of failing to resolve today's fiscal crisis. That is why 2013, in my opinion, is a pivotal year. I had a boss once who, bless his heart, was a classic, hard-charging, action-oriented type A. He ran us and my company ragged, but he got results. He had a plaque on his desk, and the plaque read, "Get the spectators off the field." Let me rework that idea. Fiscal policy uncertainty is part of what is keeping businesses and consumers on the sidelines. If our fiscal policymakers can successfully address the remaining issues and provide a multi-year roadmap toward fiscal health, I believe that that action would go a long way toward reducing the uncertainty that has been holding back the economy and get spectators off the sidelines and onto the field. Thank you very much, and I'd be happy to entertain a few questions.